lists. And the list that we started on a couple of weeks ago was a list that I stole from David Jeremiah. You can listen to him on the radio, or you can go to his website, or you can occasionally see him on television. A second list also from him, and then a third list that I picked up some years ago from Jim Pardee. And I'm trying to weave this together to help you see something very important. 2 or 3 weeks ago when we started this, I told you that David Jeremiah had pointed out that if you want to avoid getting sick, the best way to do that is have a good, strong immune system. You all haven't been here for a couple of weeks, so maybe you need to hear some of this to get organized. And he says, if you're going to have a strong immune system, there are certain things the immune system needs. Now, those of you who were here, what are those things? Food, water, rest, exercise, and absence of stress. An absence of stress. Okay? And he said, you have a spiritual immune system that the challenges life throws at you can either wipe you out and knock you under, or you can stand up to them, depending on the strength of your spiritual immune system. And the spiritual immune system needs the same things. In Deuteronomy, we read, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of God's mouth. So food for the spiritual immune system is God's word. Water. Jesus stood up at the end of a festival, the Gospels tell us, and cried out to people, if you're thirsty, come to me, I'll give you living water. And in parentheses, the Gospel writer said he was talking about the Spirit, which had not yet been given because Pentecost hadn't come. Exercise for the spiritual immune system means service. Healing things that need to be done in the kingdom. Rest, we worked on quite a while before we finally figured out what that was. What was it?
Rest.
People kept looking, you know, for something different. And an absence of stress equates to peace of mind. And there's a wonderful phrase at the end of Philippians that talks about how that comes. So the next week we began, I think it took us 2 weeks to get through that, we began to work on spiritual disciplines, things that you could do that would provide spiritual food, spiritual water, spiritual exercise, rest, and peace of mind to the spiritual immune system that you have. And last week, we started a series that looks like now will take us at least 3 weeks to get through, if the first hour experience is any measure. And that is, all right, you know what your spiritual immune system does. You've made the decision to work with the Lord to try to begin to involve yourself in those spiritual disciplines. There's been a pretty interesting parallel that wasn't intended, but it's those wonderful coincidences that come that aren't really coincidences between what Travis has been talking about and what we've been doing in here. But you've been doing all those things. What can you look at to determine whether or not it's working? And so that's the list we're working on now. Checkpoints. I work with scientific instruments, and every once in a while something goes wrong. And when it does, we call the technician in Maryland or Cary, North Carolina, or California, or Massachusetts. And they'll usually say, okay, if you got this going wrong, chances are you got a problem on this board. Let's just make sure. Pull that board out, get a voltmeter or an ammeter, and touch these points and tell us what the little device reads. And then you get a measure of what's happening with that. So where are the checkpoints? What are the things that you can look at? Now, last week we started this, and I told you we were going to have four of those, and that each of the words that we were going to use started with C. So last week we talked about checkbook. What do you do with your money? That's something you can look at. What do you do with your money? And calendar. What do you do with your time? And we've got two more to go. If the first hour is any indication, we'll do one of those today. We'll do the next one next week. Now, the reason this list is over here is that a particularly wonderful member of the first hour came in this morning and said, I've been thinking all week about what those other words could be. And here's my suggestion of some C words that might go there. I thought this was a pretty good list. It could be compassion and care, or control or character, or, you know, what do you do around church? Or, well, calories didn't exactly fit, but somebody put that up and it laughed a lot. Conduct. It turns out none of those are on my list, so the next time I do this, it might have more than four things on it. But today, we have the third one, and this one is conversation. What's the question there? How do you
word the question that you might use? Or how do you word the question that you might ask?
What are you doing with your tongue?
What do you do with your what do you do with your words? It's just a very simple question. What do you do with your words? Now, there's probably a dozen places to start. Let me start with one.
Finish this for me. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me. What a crock. Is there anybody in here who thinks that particular time-worn cliche has any truth to it?
No, but I think it was an excellent tool to get to say you were bullied. That at least you had something to say.
I think I knew then that it was a crock. I'll simply say most of you may look at me and see somebody huge. I wasn't so big when I was in high school. And I know the experience of those kinds of things. And some of you do too. Does it matter what you say?
Oh, yes.
Does it matter when you say it?
Yes.
Does it matter how you say it?
Even more than what you say.
Does it matter to whom you say it? That's about as far as I've gotten. I suspect there's two or three more I can add to that little list of questions about words.
Let me take you for a moment to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. Many of you love it when I don't give you the verse right away, because then that means you get there and you start thinking, well, he could be talking about this, he could be talking about that. Verse 43 is where I want to start. Luke 6, verse 43. See somebody near you who is struggling to find it, you help them. Luke 6, 43. The verse that we're heading to is a little bit later, but we're going to start here. There is no sound of tree that produces rotten fruit, nor again a rotten tree that produces sound fruit. Every tree can be told by its own fruit, by the fruit that it produces. People do not pick figs from thorns, nor gather grapes from brambles. So here's the verse that we're heading for. Good people draw what is good from the store of goodness in their hearts. Bad people draw what is bad from the store of badness. For the words of the mouth flow out of what fills the heart. Those are pretty powerful words. You ever have trouble communicating things that you're trying to communicate? Why? I heard several of you say that, yes, you have been down that thicker road. Why is it such a struggle?
I don't have an adequate ability to express what's on my heart. I can't get that out my mouth.
Okay.
I'm trying to evaluate how the other person's going to receive it, right, and that's confusing me. I'm trying to interpret as I speak.
I hear a, yeah, that's right, from the back of the road.
If it's an area of conflict, we're using our heart too much, that does block your mystery of the problem.
Emotions get in the way of logic. Or logic gets in the way of logic.
Get in my way. I probably
tears
yelling. I do. It just makes me so mad. But then I can't say what I want to say because I'm too busy wiping the tears.
So what do you do after a while? If you struggle to communicate, what sometimes happens? You shut up or shut down. Is there a difference between shutting up and shutting down? Somehow there is. I'm not sure I can articulate it. I don't want to say who, but I had two people in the first hour say something that I thought was absolutely profound between the two of them. One was a person sitting on the second row back here, where luckily today there's nobody sitting there. And this person says, I try to express something and it doesn't work, so after a while I just give up. I just sit there silent. Another person over in this corner says, I talk so much that I'm always talking and I'm never listening, and I get myself into so much trouble that way. I look around the room and see people patting other people on the arms, nudging each other. I'm trying not to notice. We started last week reading something out of Ecclesiastes. In the middle of that it says, there is a time to speak, there is a time to be silent. Do words matter? You bet they do. Matter when you speak? Yeah, why? Why does it matter when you speak?
Timing
is everything. Sometimes I have heard the educational specialist speak of teachable moments that come. And I've heard of other people saying, God got my attention this week. There comes a moment where the right word said at the right time can have great effect. The right word said later or said earlier may have had a very different or no effect, or an opposite effect. No matter what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
First, I don't know where it is that says, words can be used in my past. Mm-hmm. So when you're in a situation.
Or pictures of silver. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes words can heal.
The right word said at the right time could do so much. Can you think about times when the right word was said at the right time for you? It doesn't matter how you say something. Why? My grandson loves to say why. I'm hearing myself do that today. Why does that matter?
It can tell for a hindered voice.
And sometimes people go silent because they say, well, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to express this, so maybe I won't. And then the moment goes by. In the first hour, some of the people had not been to worship service and some had. In this hour, most of you have been. Do you remember what Travis Collins said about this? There's a whole bunch of this that fits almost perfectly in one little piece of what he was talking about. He used the word intentional. I think that was what was on the outline. And he said, sometimes you have to do something. You have to get up out of your chair and walk across the room. And what?
Say something.
Mm-hmm. Say something. He specifically made it in the context of words. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, he also said that is risk-taking because what you say and what you're trying to communicate may be accepted or rejected and you never know what's going to happen. Does it matter to whom you say? Now, that's the one I want to talk about this morning. And I'm not saying that I'm slighting the others or that this one's more important. It's just one I have something to say about. I have been skiing once in my life. I think the grand total of the experience was approximately 21 minutes. I forget. Snow skiing. I've done a lot of water skiing. Snow skiing. Thank you for the correction. I think it was about 22, 23 minutes. Part of that time was riding the ski lift up to the top of the bunny slope. Because that's as far as I ever went was the bunny slope. I made two runs down the bunny slope. One was about 20 yards at a time. I'd go 20 yards, I'd sit down. It was very icy that day. I'd go 20 yards, I'd sit down. The second time, I went about 150 yards. Gaining momentum and speed all along the way across this icy surface. It wasn't very steep, but I wasn't slowing down. I was speeding up. and my skis were wandering. When my skis got to approximately that now, I don't know if you've ever tried to plant one foot out that way and the other foot perfectly this way. There's very little rotation that sort of locks everything from here down in place. And so when the edges of my skis caught at whatever speed I was going at the end of 130 or 140 yards of this, I simply went like that. The friend who was with me told me later, "I thought you had died." Apparently the wind was knocked out of my lungs, giving a cry that he thought was death. He never encouraged me to go skiing again. But before that day, I had been on skiing trips probably a half a dozen or more times, because I had a van and a bunch of people that I worked with who didn't have a van, and I would drive them 5 hours up into West Virginia to snowshoe. I would take my boots, and I would take a good paperback book with me, and they would go out on the ski slopes, and I would go sit by the fire, and every once in a while I'd put my book down and go out and walk through the snow. It's beautiful up at Snowshoe. I hope some of you have been there in the winter. Beautiful up there. Well, this one particular day, because I was in the lodge reading my book by the fire, I saw them post the weather reports. And they posted a weather report that said between Snowshoe itself and the surrounding areas was due for a pretty heavy snowfall, possibly with ice, starting about 5 o'clock. And so at lunchtime, I had said to the folks that were with me, "Now I want you off the slopes and into the van, ready to leave at 4 o'clock, because I want to be off the mountain before dark." And 4 o'clock came, and everybody was there but one person. 4:30 came, that person still wasn't there. 4:45 came, that person still wasn't there. Got there a couple of minutes before 5 o'clock. Hopped in the van, just happy as could be, and I was fuming. I was just beyond irritation. And I just fumed all the way down the mountain. And we got down off the mountain finally, sliding and skidding all the way down. Scared me to death. And stopped to eat in a little restaurant somewhere down in the plains area. And I sat close to another friend of mine and just said, "I just can't believe the behavior of that guy. I can't believe how inconsiderate he was." Now, this is a guy for whom my heart breaks regularly because he is not a Christian. But he has an insight into human beings that transcends almost anybody I've ever seen in the body. He looked at me and he said, "Why are you saying this to me?" And I sort of did a double take. And he said, "Why aren't you saying this to him? He's down the other end of this row." We were all sitting at the counter at this little diner. He said, "Why don't you go say this to him?" And then he said something that stuck with me for a very long time after that. He said, "If it's not important enough to say to him, it's sure not important enough to say to me." Does it matter what you say? Yeah. Does it matter how you say it? Does it matter when you say it? Does it matter to whom you say it? I've watched, and for about the last year, most of the things that I deal with in problems in leadership have to do with people not so much saying the wrong things or saying the wrong things the wrong way. They're saying the things to the wrong people. They're not confronting problems. They're building more problems by talking around the corner or back behind the barn or whatever metaphor you care to use. That's a tough one. Now, it also matters what you say. Lots of people use speech for very bad purposes, and lots of people use speech for very good purposes, and all those things are still on the table too. This is the one that hit me. Let me take you over to James, because James talks about almost exactly the same thing, but he does it in a somewhat different way. Interestingly, a little bit more memorable, maybe. I want to take you to James chapter 3. I told the first hour that I wasn't going to talk much about the first verse, but I was going to notice it on the way by. So you can notice the first verse in James 3 as you get there. I think a couple of you have gotten there.
Can I say what I put at the top of this chapter? Oh, Lord, help me.
Only a few of you, my brothers, should be teachers, bearing in mind that we receive a stricter judgment. Okay, look at verse 2. "For we all trip up in many ways. Someone who does not trip up in speech has reached perfection maybe I should say reached a high level of perfection, and is able to keep the whole body on a tight rein. Once we put a bit in the horse's mouth to make it do what we want, we have the whole animal under our control. Or think about ships, no matter how big they are, even if a gale is driving them, they are still directed by a tiny rudder wherever the whim of the helmsman decides. So the tongue is only a tiny part of the body, but its boasts are great. Think how small a flame can set fire to a huge forest. The tongue is a flame too. Among all the parts of the body, the tongue is a whole wicked world. It infects the whole body, catching fire itself from hell, and it sets fire to the whole wheel of creation. Wild animals and birds, reptiles and fish of every kind can be tamed and have been tamed by humans, but nobody can tame the tongue. It's a pest that will not keep still, full of deadly poison. We use it to bless the Lord and Father, but we also use it to curse people who are made in God's image. The blessing and the curse come out of the same mouth. My brothers, this has to be wrong. Does any water supply give a flow of fresh water and a flow of salt water out of the same pipe? Can a fig tree yield olives, my brothers, or a vine yield figs? No more can seawater yield fresh water. And yet that's what happens, isn't it? Jump over to chapter 4.
Look at the first phrase in verse 11.
The first phrase in verse 11. Mine has a sentence and then a period and then it starts up and it's still in verse 11. Look just at that first part. What does it say? Do not slander. One translation says do not speak evil of another. What does the word slander mean? Technical definition. What does the word slander mean?
It's a verbal attack on somebody, not a written.
A verbal attack.
Not telling the truth.
And typically, it means either telling something that isn't so, or telling something that is so, but twisting and slanting it in such a way that there's not a whole lot of truth left. That's slander. And once that slander goes, it's real hard to pull it back. Brothers, don't slander one against another. When the writer of James says brothers, to whom is he speaking? People within the body. Surely they wouldn't do that. Verse 13. Yes. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Just my notes over here says the Greek word for devil means slander.
Oh, I forgot.
Father of all lies.
The Greek word for devil means slanderer. Don't act like the devil.
Jump to, still in verse chapter 4, jump to verse 13. Stay with me a minute on this because this one's interesting. Well now, you who say today or tomorrow we are off to this or that town, we're going to spend a year there trading and making some money. You never know what will happen tomorrow. You're no more than a mist that appears for a little while and then disappears. So instead of this, you should say, if it's the Lord's will, we shall be alive to do this or that. But as it is, how boastful and loud-mouthed you are. Boasting of this kind is always wrong. Everyone who knows what is the right thing to do and does not do it commits sin. A
long time ago, I don't think I've told you this in a while, if ever.
A long time ago, my grandfather on my father's side, he had 8 kids. The Second World War was over, and the 6th of those 8 kids were getting married. So 6 of 8 had gone out setting up their own household and were living someplace else. And he realized that the kids were about to lose touch with each other or with him if people didn't put some effort into staying in contact. And so here's what he said. He said to his kids, you write me a letter once a week. You tell me what's going on with you. And at the end of the week, I'll collect all the letters that come in, and I'll send you a letter back, one to each of you, telling you what's happening with everybody else and also things that are happening in the hometown where you grew up. And so every week, faithfully, for 24 years, he wrote a letter to his kids. He had 10 carbon copies, 9 carbon copies in the original, I guess. They saved that 9th carbon And I used that night carbon to type all that up so that all the grandkids would have copies of that. It took me almost as long to get it typed up as it took him to type it in the first place. Something I noticed as we were going through working on this, something I noticed was that every once in a while he would say about him and his wife, my grandmother, he would say, "We're planning to go to Floyd, Virginia, or we're planning to go to Nashville, or we're planning to go to Atlanta, or wherever we're going to." He talked about some trip they were going to take or something they were going to do. And at the end of that sentence, before the sentence was over, he'd have a comma and a capital D and a dot and a capital V and a dot. And that would be the way the sentence would end. Took me a while to figure out what that meant. Any of you got an idea? The first word is the Latin for God, Deo, or some variation of that. And the second one is a variation on the word volunteer, which means to do or to act. If God's will, if God wills that it be done, that's what the DV meant. And his putting in there was acknowledging this verse. Somebody came up to me after the lesson was over this morning and gave me a little cliche, and that's one I have heard all my life. God willing and... what's the rest of it? The creek don't rise. What does that have to do with if you live in the hills of East Tennessee and the creek rises, then you're not going to make the trip because you've got to go across the ford of the river. These are the old statements that come from older people.
But they have always said that. Whenever she would, before going somewhere or making a commitment to someone, "I'll be there, the Lord will." And I used to think, why does she always say that? And then I was reading a John Piper devotional about a year after her passing, and I read that, and I went, because she knew God. You know, I mean, she knew. It was always first thing in her mouth, out of her mouth, you know, was giving praise to God, even if you're asking her to do something.
Do our words acknowledge the dependence we have on Him?
Yeah.
Do our words acknowledge the connection we have with each other? Do our words acknowledge the encouragement we should be giving to each other? Again, that's an incomplete list. There's a lot more that you can do to complete it. How do we use our words?
Sarah, you can find communicating through the tears.
Now, there's more I can do. Let's try one or two more. Still stay in James. Take a look at verse 9. Chapter 5, verse 9. What's the term that's used there for which words might be a substitute? Don't make... mine says complaints. Yours says don't grumble. Yours says don't complain. Mine says don't make complaints. Yours says don't grumble. No, I'm not looking for C words anymore. We've got our C word for this. Don't make complaints against one another, brothers, so as not to be brought to judgment yourselves. The judge is already seen waiting at the gates. Now, I don't know that I want to have you worrying about your words because God is going to judge you. But the fact is, God is going to judge all of us. And the way we use our words is one of the things on which we're going to be judged. Now, you may remember that Jesus said, just because you've said the right words doesn't mean you've been in right relationship with me. So this is not the whole of the story. But there's a piece of it here. Still in chapter 5, look at verse 12. This one's pretty powerful. Above all, don't swear by heaven, don't swear by the earth. In fact, my translation says, don't use oaths at all. If you mean yes, what?
Say yes.
If you mean no, say no. Otherwise, you make yourself liable for judgment. It's a cheap shot to say it, but, well, it depends on what the meaning of the word is. Good Lord, that's happening so many times in so many places on every side of the political strife. And when somebody actually comes along and says what they think clearly, nobody believes it because they're so used to everything being spun.
Well, this raises the question of duplicitous people, because I was in a meeting this week where a person, we were talking about making some changes, and the person that gave the appearance of agreeing with that, she left and went to her boss, and gave a very different perspective, and then created all this furor now because she got, you know, she went back.
I thought that only happened where I worked.
You know, we're just as imperfect as IMB is everywhere else. So, you know, but that kind of thing is very frustrating. So when I read this, it's like, you know, to me that's duplicity. And if you can't give me your authentic answer in a meeting without fear, you know, or concern that, you know, it won't be received well, I mean, then that does mean I have a hard time trusting that person.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
This, James 5:12, there's a reference back to Matthew 5, where Jesus addresses that issue. And Jesus is saying, basically, I made you not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is God's stone, or by the earth, for it's his footstool. Nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Now swear by a head, it goes on and on.
Matthew 12 says, Jesus is saying, I tell you that men will have to give account on the day of judgment for every careless word that they have spoken. For your word will be acquitted, and by your word you will be acquitted.
Yes, sir.
Just quickly say that, yeah, thank you for bringing up the references. These are Jesus' exact teaching. And in the context of the Sermon on the Mount, what makes this possible, makes it possible to tell the truth, is dependence on God to be your provider and your protector. Because what happens is people come up against life and they say, if I tell the truth, I'm going to die or lose something. And only in the context of being dependent on the Father can you actually tell the truth. That's why it's so important to reference back to Jesus, the context of his teaching.
And it's beautiful, too, that passage about every sort of spare word we give, because I used to worry so much about, oh, what's the spare word that the Lord's going to judge me for in eternity? And then I realized that what he's saying is, those words that you utter thoughtlessly are going to show most what's coming in your heart, because when you're guarded, you're careful about what you say. But it's the offhanded comments that really reveal what Christ is doing in your heart. And so I started being able to come to the Lord and say, I want even the offhand comments, even the ones where I don't have the chance to think before I speak, to come from a heart that's so committed to, you know, that's so filled with a vision of you, that those offhanded comments, I'd be thrilled for you to evaluate. I want them to point to you.
Yeah. I want to close by making reference to a second relative. Barbara's dad, my father-in-law, is gone now. But I can remember very clearly watching him for years. Very quiet, not saying anything. And then when he spoke, all kinds of things just were suddenly settled. And he had an ability there that I don't have. That came most clear one day. He was visiting. They didn't visit very often, but they were visiting. And something had gone wrong with my garbage disposal, and I was going to change it out. I bought a new one. I was going to install the new one, take the old one out. Now, this is a guy who worked for years in the appliance part of a lumber company and in the construction part of a lumber company. He knew how to do this kind of stuff in his sleep. So I'm working on this thing. He pulls up a chair and just watches me. And I get most of the way through with this thing, and I'm almost finished when all of a sudden I realize I have installed the whole thing. I don't even now remember how I could have done this, either upside down, backwards, inside out. It is just totally wrong, and it was totally wrong way back there. Now, I don't know what you do when this happens, but my shoulders slumped, my head dropped, and I'm thinking things that I don't want to say. And I realized that he was there. And I turned and I looked at him, and he had this little smile on his face. And I said, you saw when I made the mistake, didn't you? And he says, yeah. And I said, why didn't you say something? He says, you didn't ask me. Now, here's my point, and I hope it's not obscure. I live a life of a teacher, which means I have kids working with me on things that are complicated that they don't know how to do. And the hardest thing for me is to sit there and watch a kid make a mistake and like, oh, wait, let me help you with that. Let me fix it right then. As opposed to letting them make the error as long as they don't kill themselves, come back and make up for it. That is the hardest thing I do. I do not have the skill my father-in-law has. The ability to wait until the time is right. His statement was, you want some help now? And I said, no, I think I know what I've done wrong well enough. He said, I thought you probably would. And off I went. The result was, this is a man who was never much more than middle-level management. But he had an influence way beyond his economic station in life, in every church he was ever in. Because what he had was wisdom. And much of that wisdom was knowing the right thing to say, the right time to say it, the right way to say it, and the right group or person to say it to. That's, I think, what this call is for, is for a check down. And I think what you have said is maybe the perfect way to say, you know, God, help me, even when I'm careless and not thinking about it, to be closer in line to using words in the right place all the time. And we'll leave that for today. I do want to give you the next one. Look up Psalm 19.
You know, I'd like to say one thing. The contrast to that is letting that person go, learning too much the wrong way,
yeah,
and having to coming back to it years later and can't do it because they
learned.
Had to learn that way. So a good teacher shouldn't be following it.
I think I can say thank you for that. This is a great list over here, but I've got a different one. This is the one we're going to talk about next week. It's a little bit of a stretch to get a C word that makes it work. So what's it dealing with? What do you do with your thoughts? That's the last one we're going to take up. What do you do with your thoughts? And I want to take you to Psalm 19. We will use this as our prayer to end our morning. But it's a verse that touches both on what we talked about today and what we will talk about next week. Psalm 19, verse 14. I'm going to read this out of King James. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Y'all have a good day.